This podcast is, of course, made possible through the support of our members and from Dartmouth Hitchcock. Imagine nationally ranked healthcare in your community with convenient locations throughout northern New England. World-class providers are closer than you think. Visit dartmouthhitchcock.org to learn more. Dartmouth Hitchcock is here.
From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Laura Kanoy, and this is The Exchange. Guns and unions were at the forefront of New Hampshire's political debate this week as two longstanding Republican priorities received a thumbs up from state Senate committees. On unions, the Commerce Committee approved a right-to-work bill which forbids organized labor from collecting dues from non-union members. The hearing was contentious at times. Here's Committee Chair Dan Innes.
Let me first ask those in attendance if we could please refrain from applause and other activities so we can continue to move this forward. Including booing.
That sound was provided by NH1. Meanwhile, another controversial bill got a yes vote in the Senate Judiciary Committee, a measure to allow gun owners to carry their weapons concealed without a special permit from local police. We're talking about both topics today in The Exchange. It's part of NPR and NHPR's effort to look at the first 100 days of the White House and the State House. Let's hear from you. The Exchange number, 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. Again, 1-800-892-6477. Respond on Facebook or Twitter at NHPR Exchange. We have two guests for the hour with us in studio, Jeb Bradley, Senate Majority Leader, Republican from Wolfboro. And Senator Bradley, nice to see you. Welcome back.
Good morning, Laura. Great to be here.
Also
Happy
with,
New Year.
Oh, and thank you very much. And Jeff Woodburn is also here. He's a Democratic Senate Minority Leader. He's from Dalton. And Senator Woodburn, welcome back and a Happy New Year to
you,
too.
Thank you very much. Glad to be here.
Well, and Senator Bradley, I'll start with you and let's start with concealed carry. Again, we'll switch gears in about half an hour and turn to right to work. But you are the prime sponsor of this concealed carry bill. Before we get into the pros and cons, Senator Bradley, just remind us, how does the system work now where a gun owner says, you know, I would like to be able to carry this weapon with me in my purse or my coat?
So if you are a law-abiding citizen and you have the right to legally possess a firearm, any firearm, in order to carry on a concealed basis, you need a permit, usually issued by your local police chief. Now, we're also an open carry state in New Hampshire, so that you need no permit to openly carry. All this would mean, this bill, if it passes, is that you could put a jacket over your handgun if you have one without having to get a second permit. Remember, you already have to go through the background check to purchase a handgun, which is why you need to legally be able to own and possess a handgun or any other gun in America.
So right now, if I were a gun owner, I could obviously keep that gun at my house. I could bring it with me when I go out, but unless I had a special permit from my local police department, I couldn't tuck it in my purse.
That's right. You could carry it on your hip openly, but you could not have it in your purse without a second permit, a special permit.
So what's the problem, Senator Bradley, with getting that permit?
Well, I think it is a, first of all, it's discretionary by the permitting authority, usually the local police chief. And I think that hopefully people will call in this morning that have had problems getting that permit who are law-abiding citizens. It's discretionary. The word in the statute is that the person has to be suitable. That leaves a wide range of interpretation. And law-abiding citizens have been denied that permit in the past. And so I think doing it without a permit, the way that Vermont has done it for over 200 years, and remember, Vermont's the safest state in the nation, to me is just a way to make sure that people have the right to protect themselves and abide by the Constitution.
Now, Senator Woodburn, I want to get you in on this, but since Senator Bradley raised the issue of suitability, this did come up in the hearing this week, and Susan Olson from the New Hampshire Women's Defense League said she had an issue with this term suitability. She feels it gives police too much discretion over who is suitable and who isn't. Let's hear.
What suitable means in my town of Warner may be very different than it is in the city of Franklin or the city of Nashua or the towns of Hudson or Hanover or Sandown.
So what do you think, Senator Woodburn? Too much discretion for local police?
Well, first I want to say that the process in which this was done, both of these bills, the right to work as well as the concealed carry, were rushed through without a lot of respect, without a lot of consideration, immediately following it, rammed through, and that's not how we operate in New Hampshire. That's not the model in which, as a former civics teacher, that I can say proud of the process. We have debated this bill, and I come from a part of the state where a gun is a tool. It's like a chainsaw or any other tool, and it's one that we have a long history of respect and understanding and common sense. For 100 years, we have had this bill. It's worked fine. It's part of our culture. It's part of the way we operate. And I have looked for those questions. So Senator Bradley had mentioned people who have been rejected. And there have been some occasions, those have happened, but usually it's a pause. It's a pause in the process, and I have not found any legitimate person come to me who has been rejected because of that suitability. The one that was pointed to me was someone who was threatened, a police officer, while being drunk, a risk for drunk driving. That's the best example I was given. That's not a good example. And Judge Stevens, who's brother and father, prominent Republican and Democratic politics in our state, agreed with that assessment that he was not qualified, should not have it because of his record and because of what his threatening comments to police officers.
So on that note about police, I'm sure you're aware, Senator Woodburn, that usually the New Hampshire Chiefs of Police Association testifies against this idea of repealing the concealed carry permit. They like that extra layer of what they feel is protection or judgment on their part to deem who's suitable or not. Why do you think they did not testify this time? A couple media reports made note of that.
Yeah, I mean, I think that there's a political assessment as to, you know, where this is going. I mean, when you look at the number of co-sponsors, there's no question what the results are going to be. The majority of the senators in the Senate have co-sponsored this bill. Police chiefs in my district and rural communities in the state of New Hampshire have seen this firsthand and up close. And what I've heard is people coming to apply, an 18-year-old who they have a discussion with the police chief, and after consideration, which I think is a good thing always in our business, they decide, you know what, maybe it isn't right to apply. Or somebody that applied for a permit and a store owner and they suggested some gun training and was unable to hit the broadside of a barn, and he made the determination not to pursue it. This pause is the greatest benefit that we have. It's the greatest benefit, I think, for all of us in public life to pause, consider, and evaluate, and then make decisions. That's not the process that we experienced this week, and that's a process that's worked for 100 years and it's worked very well.
Well, at the hearing, Xander Rice Hawkins of Granite State Progress said she appreciates that police make the judgment about the suitability of someone who can carry a concealed weapon. Let's hear.
But why would I want to intimidate the weak?
Law enforcement in a local community would have some sense of someone's character and whether they were a suitable person. So they might not be a prohibited person from possessing firearms in general, but are they somebody who should have that added ability to legally carry a hidden loaded weapon?
Again, that's Xander Rice Hawkins at Granite State Progress speaking on the hearing on the concealed carry bill. And Senator Bradley, as you know, police do feel concerned about this, especially nowadays when we see police being shot at around the country. So what do you say to them when they come to you and say, you know, Jeb, I would really like to be able to give that extra layer of scrutiny when it comes to a concealed weapon?
Look, I certainly respect, all our police officers in New Hampshire and around the country. They do a hard job. We ask them to do a hard job. I just respectfully disagree with how they see that there should be a second level of review for a law-abiding citizen in the United States who is legally entitled to own a handgun to have to get a special permit to carry it on a concealed basis when we already allow in New Hampshire open carry. And again, I go back to the example of, you know, the state of Vermont that is the safest state in the nation. Their crime rate is far lower than ours. They've had permitless carry forever in Vermont, and it's without a problem. And we're demographically very similar, I think, to Vermont. Maine has just recently adopted permitless carry. They're the second safest state in the nation. Now, we're the fourth safest state, so it's pretty good, but Vermont and Maine's violent crime rate is far lower than ours. And I think I want New Hampshire, you know, to respect the Second Amendment rights of people to be able to defend themselves when necessary, and be more like Maine and Vermont, which are very safe states, and a lot less like, you know, some other states where we have very strong gun control laws, but are some of the murder capitals of the country, like Chicago or Washington. So I think that, you know, that's what we're debating here. It's a fundamental right of people to be able to protect their lives, their liberties, and their loved ones. And we already have that review through the instant check of whether somebody's entitled to own a handgun in the United States.
There might be other reasons why those crime rates in some states are so much higher than New Hampshire's, and why Vermont and Maine are
I think there are a lot of reasons
levels
why.
Levels of poverty.
Yeah, I would agree. But demographically, we're very similar to Vermont and Maine. And I believe that if we allow this the same way that Vermont has had forever, that it will make us a safer, not a less safe state.
Senator Woodburn, real quick, and then we have lots of people want to jump in.
I would say, looking at the New Hampshire comparison with other states, I mean, certainly New Hampshire is twice as large, more than twice as large as Vermont. Our culture is different. Our proximity to major urban centers of Boston, the travel through of activity across the borders and down through New Hampshire as a major thoroughway for New England is very different than those states. It's part of our culture. It's part of our precedent. Before we start changing things, let's respect our history and understand why this fence was put up in the 1920s, and before we start taking it down in a willy-nilly right-wing template, which really is what's changed in the state of New Hampshire.
Well, and we talked about, you know, police concerns in the past about this, and both you and Senator Bradley jumped in on this. So here's Kyle with an email who says, I think it's a good idea to get rid of, he means the permit for concealed carry. Kyle says, last time I checked, bad guys don't ask for permission, and cops might say differently, but if they do their jobs correctly, they shouldn't have problems. So what about that point? We've heard that from other people, Senator Woodburn, that, you know, no matter what, criminals aren't going to go ask for a permit.
You know, that's an excellent question. And as someone who's driven along with our local police when they're out there on the beat, what you quickly learn is what creates that opportunity. You pull somebody over in the middle of the night and there is a suspicious situation and you don't quite have... They may not be able to put the pieces together, but they have a gun and they are not registered. That is an opportunity for more additional questioning, additional information that it becomes valuable to preventing crimes from happening. And you know, so that is something that is a valuable piece for them to have. The proliferation of guns around New Hampshire and around our country and the armament that is available, it's something we need to be concerned about and use all the tools that we can get. And our job is to listen to professionals and respect what they're doing on the front lines.
Well, and again, regarding police, here's the other side of it. An email from Jerry in Dover who says, I'm a gun owner, have permits to carry in two states. I support the right of police chiefs who have the best feeling for the pulse of their communities as to who is fit and who is not. Jerry says, let's remember how the legislature rushed to allow guns in the statehouse and then had a Republican member drop several weapons onto a table during a meeting. Jerry says, here is a classic example of Republicans fixing something that is not broken. Senator Bradley, what do you think? Jerry says it's working. Don't mess with it.
Well, again, I would disagree. And I think that to be opposed to this bill is to say to law-abiding citizens, and remember, we are talking about law-abiding citizens who already have the right to openly carry a weapon on their hip, a handgun on their hip, that they can't cover it up with a jacket without a special permit. So, again, the states that have had this near us, in Vermont and Maine, safest states in the nation, I believe that, you know, we will become safer if people have the ability without the special permit to defend their lives, their liberties, and their loved ones. And that's not a, you know, as my friend from the North Country says, a right-wing template. That's just a constitutional right to defend your families. And I think that, you know, that's how we should look at this. And, you know, we heard the same arguments in the past about the Stand Your Ground law. Well, you know, we passed that 5 years ago, and that hasn't been a problem. So I respectfully disagree with, you know, my friends that are police chiefs. I think this will work just fine in New Hampshire. It's worked fine in Maine and Vermont. We're very similar to them. again, we don't want to be like Chicago, which is the murder capital of the world now, with some of the strictest gun laws in the country.
Senator Woodburn?
Yes, I'm glad. I wanted to jump in on that. In terms of the issue of political, this has been something that Meldrum Thompson said was a sensible gun law. It has had a long history of Republican support of keeping this law that works very well, very sensible. Even our Senate president early in his career supported keeping this. This is common sense until our Republican Party has been at war with moderation, a war at compromise, and serving interests of people outside of the state of New Hampshire. That's what this is about.
Let's hear what our listeners think. Again, the exchange number is 1-800-892-6477. Today in the exchange, it's a twofer. We're covering two bills that both drew large crowds this week at the state Senate. One, a measure called constitutional carry. That's what we're talking about right now. And another, which we'll talk about a little bit later, a right-to-work bill. You can join us, 1-800-892-6477. And Senator Bradley, Senator Woodburn, let's go to our listeners. Michelle is joining us from Windham. Hi, Michelle. You're on the exchange. Welcome.
Good morning. How are you?
Good. Go ahead, Michelle.
I was denied my pistol revolver license on a renewal in summer of 2015. My police chief had approved me initially in 2007 and then a renewal in 2011, but he chose to deny me, even though I've never even had a speeding ticket.
So did he tell you why, Michelle?
The department chose not to contact my references. And so when I got my denial letter, he said that he hadn't heard from them. And so that was the basis of my denial. I had to take my police department to court. And because they canceled it multiple times, it took 112 days for me to finally be able to get my license. And the judge issued it very quickly.
So it was a bureaucratic thing, but it ended up being a mess for you, Michelle.
Oh, and very expensive. It's not easy to challenge your police department, and it cost me over $2,500 to hire a lawyer and have it handled in court.
So thank you for the call, Michelle. And Senator Woodburn, so sounds like she is a law-abiding citizen, but bureaucratic snafus meant she had a long delay and sounds like it was a big hassle.
You know, I voted for Stand Your Ground. I have a record of being pro-gun on some of these issues. And when I evaluated this issue, I went to the proponents of this legislation and said, I don't know how I'm going to vote, but I am basing my vote on evidence. Show me the evidence where someone was denied. I want to read the cases. So I'm not familiar with Michelle's case. I'm interested in learning about it. The case that they gave me, that the proponents of this bill gave me as an undecided new senator, was a case that I went in and read the case and knew the judge, Judge Stevens. And it was not a good case. It did not compel me. So I have not seen any evidence. I look forward to seeing this, Michelle. Please share it with me, and I would appreciate hearing that. By and large, this pause has worked. We do not have a lot of these challenges, and when they do, they don't stand up, but they're very, very small.
All right, let's take another call. This is Linda in Newfield. Hi, Linda. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I'd like to preface my statement by saying that we've had guns in our house ever since I've been married. My husband is a lifelong hunter and former law enforcement. Let me say to Senator Bradley, I've been in stores where people come in with guns strapped to themselves, and it's frightening. It's actually frightening. And you don't really know their intent, and they're standing there. The thought that they'll even have more opportunities to bring in guns uncovered is even more terrifying. I mean, what are we going to see for people who come? Anyway, comparing our location to Chicago is completely off the wall.
All right, Linda,
well,
we will.
One thing I just want to mention about
Linda, I'm going to hold you over.
Orlando.
Linda, I'm going to hold you over a break, okay? I'm really sorry to do that to you. We've got to hit a short break, and we'll go back to you in just a minute. This is The Exchange on NHPR. This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today in The Exchange, two bills that drew a lot of attention this week at the State House, constitutional carry and right to work. The exchange number for you to join us is 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange@nhpr.org. Respond on Facebook or Twitter at NHPR Exchange. Senator Jeb Bradley is here. He's Senate Majority Leader and a Republican from Wolfboro. Senator Jeff Woodburn is also with us. He's Democratic Senate Minority Leader. He's from Dalton in the North Country. And with us also is our caller, Linda from Newfield. And Linda, I'm sorry I had to cut you off there. Go ahead and finish up your point, please.
Oh, thank you, Laura. Now, my point is, with the recent proliferation of guns and gun ownership, we are in a situation nationwide that we have to be concerned about incidents that are happening. Certainly, the situation most recently in the Orlando airport was unique. We've traveled with guns. We know what that's like. But all of the situations that are coming to fore should make us a little more vigilant, not less vigilant, not more open to the situations that can happen when someone gets a hold of a gun that they shouldn't have. This particular ex-soldier in Orlando who shot at the airport, I mean, he was not adjudicated mentally ill, so therefore he was okay about carrying a gun.
Well, Linda, let's talk about the concealed, because we are planning actually a whole show on sort of, you know, who can own, who can't, how we make sure guns don't get into the wrong hands and so forth. But Senator Bradley, the broader idea that Linda is raising, I think, is just that this legislation would encourage more people to be out there with guns, and she's concerned about that.
No, it really is about law-abiding citizens being able to exercise their right for self-defense. And I go back to Michelle's call. I mean, what if in that 112-day period that she was denied the permit, she was being stalked or being threatened and could not defend herself? Then you're talking about potentially a very tragic situation that somebody who is being threatened doesn't have the ability to defend themselves. And the fact of the matter is, look, we're having these horrific incidences around the country. And the relationship of mental health issues and guns is something that does need to be looked at. There is no question about that. And the shooter in Fort Lauderdale fell through the cracks of mental health and should not have, okay? But if you look at the overall statistics over the last 20 years, gun ownership has increased dramatically in the United States, but violent crimes have also decreased dramatically.
Even with all the mass shootings we've seen.
Yes. I mean, those are the FBI statistics that I have, you know, right here. And the statistics don't lie. And so there are a lot of reasons why violent crime has decreased over this period of time. Better policing, more police officers,
the aging
police
of the country.
Using technology, more imprisonment, things like the aging of the country is probably another one. But you can't dismiss the fact as violent crime has come way down, nearly half the amount of violent crime as 20 years ago, gun ownership has gone up. And so the ability for people to defend themselves is something that's very important in our society today.
Well, and Linda, thank you for the call. And we will be looking at that other issue that you raise in a later program. We're working on that. Go ahead, Senator Woodburn.
I just want to say is that we have a large number of new senators in the Senate. And we have this very interesting piece of information Michelle shared. I don't know, and I will not know. I will not know the answer to this question because we are rushing this thing through.
You're talking about Michelle, our earlier caller who said her permit
had,
was denied.
They had a hearing, listened to it, written testimony, and then closed the hearing and voted on it. This is appalling. I can't get the information, and new senators can't, because this is rushed through without restraint and without consideration and respect for our process.
I want to raise another issue with you, Senator Woodburn. Some people who support this law of repealing the concealed carry permit say, look, you know, this should make citizens feel more comfortable because then they don't have to see if someone's carrying or not. Some people feel nervous when they see a gun, you know, strapped to somebody's hip. But if they didn't see it, they would feel more comfortable. I wonder what you think about that.
That's an excellent question. And as a landlord going into apartments and things like that, that issue of seeing a gun is I would approach someone very differently knowing that they have a gun. I may not escalate a conversation, a those situations where you are surprised. Surprise is the element of concern that you have for police as well as for citizens. And I think that level of seeing a gun is an advantage that both sides have to know how to operate with each other. And by hiding it and being surprised is very, very dangerous. And police officers will tell you that is the most dangerous situation and why those stops that are, when people are pulled over and they put their fingerprints on the back of the car, the police, because that is the most dangerous. In the state of New Hampshire, having lost people who are police officers, those situations are where we most often lose our police officers, those dangerous situations.
Let's take another call. Again, the exchange number, 1-800-892-6477. Travis is in Manchester. Hi, Travis. You're on the exchange. Welcome.
Hey, thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
So I was robbed at gunpoint behind my apartment in Manchester the day before Halloween.
Yikes, Travis.
It was not fun. But the individual had borrowed his, quote-unquote, borrowed his parents' handgun. And when he got arrested, he was also tagged for illegally concealing a firearm. My point is basically that this permit is an additional deterrent to someone who may want to do something ill with a firearm. And I feel that having that deterrent can protect people like me who've been victims of violent crime. I'll take my call off the air.
Okay, Travis, and I'm very sorry to hear what happened to you and glad you made it through that one. Senator Bradley, real quick.
Well, again, criminals and criminal behavior is going to continue to happen in our society. And this is not about, this is about the rights of law-abiding citizens that people want to restrict to legally be able to defend themselves in a situation like our caller just talked about. The example that he uses, the person was going to commit a crime anyway, and having to get a permit to conceal carry is not going to restrict people from committing crimes that they're already bent on doing. And so, again, it's about law-abiding citizens being able to defend themselves. And I think that's what we're missing here. And again, what we're missing here is that we already have the right to openly carry. And I disagree with Mr. Woodburn, Senator Woodburn, on this. I think that the vast majority of people in New Hampshire and around the country, when they go to the post office or the supermarket, they would prefer not to see people exercising their right in New Hampshire to openly carry and would prefer not to, to have people carry on a concealed basis.
So you think
certainly
it makes people
that's
feel,
what people have told me.
Feel more comfortable
to
not know if you're at the grocery store.
Realistically so.
Or whatever. Well, this actually came up in the hearing as well. Let's hear State Representative Al Baldassarre, Republican from Londonderry, saying that he favors repealing the concealed carry permit and that for that reason that you mentioned, Senator Bradley, he doesn't want to intimidate other people. In this case, he had a back and forth with Democratic Senator Betty Lasky. Let's hear.
But why would I want to intimidate the weak or people that get scared, like maybe Senator Lasky, who's scared if she sees an open carry? I no disrespect. I mean, I'm just...
Thank you. You underestimate me,
Rick. Okay, well...
So what do you think, Senator Woodburn? Again, as Senator Bradley says, some people would just rather not see that gun when they're, picking out lettuce at the grocery store.
There's a reason why bank robbers hide their gun. There's a real reason why they hide their gun. And I think that it clearly there is some – I come from a rural area. I have no concern when I see a gun in someone's truck. I have no concern when I see it on their hip. But I approach them with a certain level of knowledge and understanding that I may not accelerate the discussion if it's a heated discussion. And I think our police officers particularly need to know when they approach somebody whether they are having a concealed weapon is absolutely critical to their ability to do their job.
Well, I think what my friend Senator Woodburn is saying is that he would advocate getting rid of the open carry law and promote even further restrictions on the abilities of people to exercise their right to defend themselves. I mean, that's what we're talking about here. Senator Woodburn, with all due respect, you're trying to treat law-abiding citizens as if they're criminals. And that's the difference between you and me. We're trying to pass a law that protects the rights of law-abiding citizens, not enhancing criminals. We need to deal with criminal behavior in the way that we should be dealing with criminal behavior. But law-abiding citizens and their right to defend themselves should not be restricted.
I'm going to let you jump in,
yes,
and then I have a couple more calls I want to take.
I support the current law, which does allow, and I can tell you, because I know lots of people. It's not hard to find people who use this process and say the process works perfectly. They've done it all over the country. They moved to the North Country. I know a guy who applied in the morning, and he got his permit in the afternoon, brought to his house by the local police officer. That's the experience that I see. And people live under this. People live today. It's not a harassment. And, of course, people should have the right to have open carry unless we have any evidence that it is not working, and we don't have any evidence.
Let's take another call. This is Andrew in Lebanon. Hi, Andrew. Go ahead. You're in the exchange. Thanks for calling in.
Yes. Thank you for having me. I used to be a police officer in Lebanon, and I used to do the background research for my chief.
For the concealed carry permits?
For the concealed carry permits. And we did not deny many, but we certainly did deny when we would know sometimes people who legally could own weapons who had mental health issues that didn't rise to the level where they couldn't own a gun, but certainly they were a concern for us. One of the people who, it was sort of strange, he didn't actually live in Lebanon, but tried to get a permit through us, was Dan Brown of Plainfield, who had a major standoff with federal authorities. You've done shows on him before in Plainfield. He was the tax evader.
Right, I remember.
He kept insisting on wanting a concealed permit, and he certainly was not a person you wanted to have one. He had threatened people on numerous occasions, and the idea that it was nice to know when he had a weapon on him, because you could see it, because he was a law-abiding citizen, so he didn't conceal on that level. He knew that he couldn't conceal a weapon, because if he did, that would be a criminal act that we could have used against him.
Well, Andrew, thank you for calling in. And Senator Bradley, this is the issue for people who oppose this legislation, that, you know, there are people who police have concerns about, even though they haven't, you know, gone out and broken a law and gotten arrested.
Well, and I guess I would answer that by why did it take, you know, the earlier caller, Michelle, 112 days to get a permit when it was a renewal permit? I mean, that is the problem. And for a instance like hers, that could have tragic consequences if she was being stalked or harassed or, you know, threatened in some way and needed to be able to defend herself. So I think that the issue of, you know, mental health is something our country needs to deal with, and how we, you know, make sure that people that shouldn't, you know, have mental health issues and are adjudicated, then they can lose their Second Amendment rights. You ought to be able to, if you can prove that you've, you know, gotten beyond that condition, you ought to be able to have them restored. But that's a totally different issue. We're talking about law-abiding citizens that already have the right to openly carry, that have passed the background checks, not having to have a second permit. I think it's being blown into a much bigger issue than it really is. And let's also not forget, Vermont has had this forever and is the safest state in the nation.
Well, and Andrew, thank you. Good to hear from you. And let's go lastly to Susan. Then I want to switch gears, guys, and talk about right to work. The other contentious bill that you folks had at the state Senate this week. But let's go to Susan in Ware first. Hi, Susan. Go ahead. You're on the air. Thanks for calling in.
Well, I'm actually not in Ware, but I'm with the Women's Defense League. I'm calling to say that perhaps Senator Woodburn may be entitled to his opinion, but not to his own facts. 1923, the law was enacted specifically and deliberately to disarm and class as felons ethnic minority trade union members who struck the Enniskeg Mills. It's that simple.
So police use this as a way to deny some level of carrying guns to minorities and union members, Susan? Is that what you're saying?
Well, there's no standard. That's the problem.
What do you think about this, Senator Woodburn? Thank you, Susan, for the call. I have heard other people make this argument that police look at minorities, for example, you know, differently and may decide just by some bias to deny somebody a carry permit.
I think the notion that our police are using this law, and there's fully an opportunity for these to be challenged if someone is, and any police chief or whoever in the police department is abusing people's individual rights, they certainly should bring those to the public. I'm sure the union leader and other more conservative papers would love to write those stories. We're not hearing it. The evidence is not clear that there is any abuse. When I asked when I was an undecided senator on this, with a history of voting in favor, voting against gun control in favor of the Stand Your Ground, I said, give me the evidence, because I want to base my on if there's a problem, let's solve it. If there's not a problem, I'm not interested in solving it. That's the motivating factor. Show us the problem. Michelle called in. I, unfortunately, and a lot of senators will not have the opportunity, because we are rushing this through
this is again
without
the woman whose
a discussion.
Permit was denied,
we
and
need time
it took a
to
long time.
Study these things. Issues come up. If Susan has specific cases she wants to share with us, let's bring them to the. Let's send the bill back to the committee. Let's listen to these. Let's not rush this thing through and try to, you know, placate our out-of-state right-wing folks. Let's take the New Hampshire way. Let's do it the New Hampshire way, not the Washington way.
The reality is, my good friend from
Dalton,
the North Country, this bill has been considered, I think, in three straight sessions. We've had multiple hearings in the House, multiple hearings in the Senate. If he was not aware that, you know, people like Michelle were having problems getting their permits, then I don't think he had paid attention to the evidence that was displayed at some of these earlier hearings. I think people know very well what the subject matter is of this bill. The bill was ready to go. We have 300 bills in the Senate this year. It's just part of the natural course of us doing our job. There's nothing untoward as a result of the process.
Well, let's switch gears, guys, to the other topic that I wanted to cover with both of you today. And we have a Facebook comment from Dennis, who helps us get there. He says, law-abiding citizens are not the problem. If one can legally buy a gun, they should be able to carry it any way they want. Dennis says, as far as right to work, it seems to me that it doesn't benefit workers, but benefits companies. If you look at the states that have passed a right-to-work bill, workers' pay have decreased. Tax incentives, he says, should be enough to attract businesses. So, Dennis, thank you for helping us make that transition. And let's talk about right-to-work, gentlemen. And Senator Bradley, to you first, what is right-to-work? What does that really mean?
Right-to-work means that if you are working at a unionized business or a public employee that is part of a union, that not only would you, which you currently have now, have the ability to not pay union dues that would be used for political purposes, but that you would not have to pay for the union to represent you in collective bargaining or grievances. And so I believe that, and we'll get to the economic benefits of right to work in a minute, but you know, in the live free or die state of New Hampshire, individuals should have that choice as to whether or not they want to be represented by a union and pay for that privilege, if you will. And as a union member, you ought to be able to hold the union leadership accountable for your money. And the only way you can do that is to, you know, voluntarily join the union and pay those dues, or be able to not pay those dues. So I think in a state that protects individual rights and believes in individuals' choices, that this is a common sense measure, and we'll get to it in a moment. But there was very compelling testimony by the state's largest business organization, the BIA, how it will positively impact our ability to grow jobs, in particular manufacturing jobs.
Well, we'll hear from lots of the testimony at that hearing. And don't worry, Senator Woodburn, I'll get you in on this as well. You can join us, too, as we turn our attention to Right to Work, 1-800-892-6477. Send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org. More in a moment. This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today in The Exchange, we're looking at two bills that drew large crowds this week at the State House, constitutional carry and, what we're looking at right now, a right-to-work bill. Our coverage is part of NPR and NHPR's effort to look at the first 100 days of the White House and the State House. So let's hear from you, your thoughts, questions, comments now about right-to-work. 1-800-892-6477. 1-800-892-NHPR. Send email to exchange@nhpr.org Respond on Facebook or Twitter at NHPR Exchange. Two state senators are with us. Jeff Woodburn, he's the Democratic Senate Minority Leader. He's from Dalton. Also with us, Jeb Bradley. He's the Senate Majority Leader. He's from Wolfboro. Again, that number, 1-800-892-6477. So, Senator Bradley, just to clarify, this is about union dues and whether non-union workers should have to pay a portion of those dues. The name is a little confusing for folks because it sounds like it's about whether somebody has a right to a job or not. This is not about a right to work, really. It's about a right to not contribute to the union.
Well, it's a right to work in a union run, whether it's public job or private sector.
This employs to both types of unions.
Yeah, it's a right to work without having to be represented by the union and pay either union dues or, in particular, in this case, what are known as agency fees, the collective bargaining and grievance representation by the union.
So why should non-union members, Senator Woodburn, have to chip in if they don't want to?
Let me just say this is another right-wing template issue that was rushed through right after the hearing and rushed through this week. And it really is about one thing, and that is forcing wages down and making unions weaker. The current situation works well. We've had it for 40 years. Republican legislatures have supported the notion that we have in New Hampshire. Nobody is forced to join a union. And, you know, it's as simple as this. 10 of us want to go get some pizza, and one says, well, I really don't want any, and I want someone else to pay my fair share. Unions have to protect everybody, whether you join the union or don't join the union. And we have in New Hampshire, which is a truly unique New Hampshire bipartisan experience, is that you pay a minimum fee that doesn't go for any other activities except for that small piece that is the representation piece that you need and you get as a person that's working in that workforce.
So just to clarify, so let's say I'm a teacher, I decide not to join the teachers union. Yep. They say, okay, Laura, you don't have to join the teachers union, but you need to pay 75% or something of the union dues. And if I get into trouble as a teacher, the union will come and defend me.
That's right. Whether that 75% is right. And as a teacher, I've seen that. I've seen people who don't join the union who get representation when they need it most. Many don't ever think they'll need it. But it's also that collective bargaining piece. If they can break the collective bargaining, that means every individual employee is on their own. And, you know, that might be fine for the strongest, the smartest, the best among us. But for those who aren't, who need that, who and want to collectively negotiate as a unit, when you break that, you break their ability. And, you know, let's face it, are unions growing in this country, in the state of New Hampshire? No. This is an effort to further destroy unions. And I can tell you where I live, when dollars circulated and we had strong union jobs that kept businesses open, it made our community stronger. It made fathers and mothers able to volunteer in their community. It made life better. And this is about driving wages down. And it is while expenses are going up, and our great friends who are out there, workers' rights, are the same ones that are fighting things like minimum wage while income equality is at historic levels, opportunity is dwindling. We need to fight to build an economy from the bottom up, not the top down.
So just using my I'm a teacher example, let's say right to work passes, Senator Woodburn, and I don't join the union. Now I'm not kicking in any dues, and then I get into trouble. Well, I haven't chipped in, so does the union still have to defend me, or do they say, Laura, you're on your own?
What the goal is they want to have less union employees. They want to have less people that will be available to represent you. So it is going to dwindle, obviously, the amount of money that comes into the union to be able to effectively bargain for you, represent you, provide other educational opportunities for them. It's that professionalism and all those things that go to that. It's about weakening unions. That's what this is about.
So, Senator Bradley, I know you want to jump in. I just want to play a little bit from the hearing on this issue of freeloading that, you know, non-union members should have to kick in a little bit, because they do benefit from bargaining and protection and so forth. So let's hear from Richard Lawton. He's a member of Teamsters Local 633 in Manchester. This is his opinion on how, again, non-union members would be able to freeload under right to work. Let's hear.
The bargaining unit is the people that we represent under contract, whether they pay dues or not. And that's the deal. We still have to represent people who do not pay dues. That's a theft of services. They're not paying for that service. Their fellow employees have to pay for that service for them, and that's not correct. This is New Hampshire. Everybody pays their own way. They knew that when they came to get the job, that it was a union shop. And if it was elected or voted for a union shop while I was there, the majority of the people voted for that. So that's about fairness. It's about theft of services. That's all it is.
Again, that's Richard Lawton speaking at the hearing on right to work. And what do you think, Senator Bradley, the freeloading argument?
Well, look, unions have opposed a provision that would say to people that don't want to be members of the union that the union should not represent them or collectively bargain for them. And unions have opposed that. So I agree. If you don't want to be a member of the union, you should have the right not to be the member of the union, not to have them collectively bargain for you, not to represent you in grievances. I agree with that. But unions, just like they've tried to block right-to-work legislation, have also blocked that provision.
So that would be the more fair way to do it, you're saying?
Yeah, that would be the fairest way to do this. And, you know, I just, again, have to take exception to, you know, what my good friend from the North Country said. This is not about forcing wages down. This is about making New Hampshire more competitive and having the ability to attract manufacturing jobs, in particular, to New Hampshire. And one of the people that testified was Tom Sullivan of Sturm Ruger. Sturm Ruger is a huge employer in Sullivan County. In fact, the largest employer in Sullivan County. And we all know they expanded their operations to Arizona as opposed to New Hampshire.
Because of energy costs, they said.
No. Here's what Mr. Sullivan said. Second, and importantly, from a practical matter, this bill, Right to Work, will help New Hampshire attract businesses and promote itself as a good place to do business. No other state in New England has such a law, so this law would unquestionably allow New Hampshire to distinguish itself from its neighbors. They chose Arizona because we are not a right-to-work state. And that's the problem. And that's why the Business and Industry Association testified in support of this. And states like Indiana, Wisconsin, Michigan, Oklahoma, all who have adopted right-to-work in the last, well, Oklahoma in 2001, the other states since 2012, have seen significant manufacturing growth. And while my friend, you know, Senator Woodburn, wants to claim that this is all about depressing wages, wage growth has actually been higher in those right-to-work states because of job growth. So, you know, it's, again, something that will make New Hampshire more competitive, more jobs for struggling New Hampshire families. That's what this is about.
Well, since you mentioned Tom Sullivan, Vice President of Sturm Ruger Firearms in Newport, Senator Bradley, let's hear a little bit of him from the hearing, making that point that you made, that right to work would help New Hampshire attract businesses. Let's hear.
No other state in New England has such a law, so the law would unquestionably allow us in New Hampshire to distinguish itself from our local neighbors. As you are undoubtedly aware, New England states have been hemorrhaging jobs as companies seek friendly states to conduct business. There's a lot of work to do, for sure, but this law would provide a solid foundation for New Hampshire to begin building a reputation as a state that welcomes companies along with the jobs, economic stability, and growth that come with them.
Again, that's Vice President of Sturm Ruger Firearms, Tom Sullivan, speaking at the hearing on right to work. And Senator Woodburn, what do you think? That this would distinguish New Hampshire as the only New England right to work state, would make us stand out?
First of all, Sturm Ruger is not a union shop, so it'd have no impact on whether they grow in New Hampshire or don't grow in New Hampshire. You know, a quick review of some of the challenges we face, the real challenges, not the right-wing template challenges that are being rushed through, but the real challenges we know for business in New Hampshire is workforce, it's energy, It's attracting and keeping young people. It's quality transportation. It's programs that bring workers and train them into the work jobs that are needed today. It's being progressive and reasonable so we can keep young people, that we don't look like these regressive southern states that are too busy worried about bathrooms and things like that and not worried about economic development. We need to do it the New Hampshire way. We need to reject this like we have for the last 40 years. The 40 years, New Hampshire said, no, this is a fringe issue. We do not want to follow that path. Workers in those states have less benefits, less training, less opportunity, and it's a bad model, and we shouldn't be rushing it through.
Senator Bradley, all last year we heard from economists and business leaders that their biggest concern is workforce development. They talk not so much about the problem of having workers, but of having jobs, but finding workers to fill those jobs. So it used to be jobs, jobs, jobs. Now it's workers, workers, workers. So how does Right to Work help bring in workers, retain workers, get workers in those training programs so they can fill those jobs? How does Right to Work help with that workforce development issue?
I would agree, Laura, that the only problem that we face in terms of economic development in our state is not just whether we're a Right to Work state or not. I mean, energy is an issue, high health care costs, high business taxes, workforce development issues, retaining young people. These are all issues. But Right to Work is also an issue. And what the testimony of the BIA said the other day is that 75% of companies that are looking to locate and expand in different states just pass over states that are not Right to Work. So this is one more way of making ourselves competitive, making ourselves stand out in a region that doesn't have Right to Work states in order to attract businesses here. It doesn't mean we don't have to fight for lower energy costs, which is something that I've been doing for years, or lower health care costs, which, again, something I've been doing for a long time, or lower business taxes, which we successfully have lowered. We need to do all of this. This is an all-of-the-above strategy. But to, you know, just say, oh, we're not going to do Right to Work because we have to concentrate on other things, we have to make New Hampshire holistically competitive for business location. And we are in an extremely competitive environment with 49 other states. This will help us.
Let's take a call. This is Mike in Alexandria. Hi, Mike. You're on The Exchange. Welcome.
Yeah, it's actually Jeff.
Jeff. Okay.
Yeah, all right. Close enough. Right to Work is good in one way and has a deficiency in another. The basic problem is the agency fees and forcing somebody to join the union. I don't think that it's fair for the unions to do the heavy lifting on labor protection, which the labor laws have created the safety net that unions looked for 40, 50 years ago when we had all the labor problems and abuses towards labor. So we have those set in stone. They're in every state. They're federal laws. So Right to Work doesn't change your protections there. What it does do, though, is allow somebody to ride on the coattails of the union negotiations, which really saves the money to only have one person negotiating for labor contracts. And it's also that if there was a small agency fee to take that into consideration, and or if you wanted to pay the fees, also have the legal representation to protect you if you have a labor dispute with your employer.
So what are you saying exactly, Mike? I'm a little unclear. Do you favor Right to Work or not?
I favor Right to Work, but I don't think somebody should expect the same benefit. You know, otherwise, literally what they're going to have to do is if there's a union, like the state employees, right, and they do the negotiation for the contract, they literally out on their own. They're not under that contract. They have to go and negotiate for their own wages and benefits.
I see what you're saying, Jeff. Yeah. Okay. So that's the point you were making, Senator Bradley. But under federal labor law, can you do that?
I think that this is something, again, that unions have fought. They want to be able to negotiate for everybody in the union. And I think that if you are a Right to Work state and somebody chooses not to be a member of the union or have the union work on your behalf, that you should not be entitled to the services of the union. I mean, that's fair. And that's, quite frankly, what we should be doing. But again, unions have opposed that.
Senator Woodburn.
First of all, you know, unions have what I have seen in my own eyes and companies that are unionized, like UPS, when you watch them come together and focus on safety and see that communication, that cooperation that really does work for both sides. UPS chooses to be in that in relationship. This would get in between that relationship between business. This would say you cannot do it. This is weakening the union when a company may want a union. And what is the, you know, little government doing, making it impossible and difficult for companies and workers to communicate with each other in an effective manner?
And I would disagree with, you know, my friend from the North Country again. This allows union members, and let's remember that the polling in New Hampshire is very strong in support of Right to Work, and it's even strong in union households because they support choice, number one, and number two, they support the ability by, you know, being able to say no to having to pay to a union, to holding union officials accountable for the decisions they make. And if you force people to pay, that accountability goes out the window.
So the legislature has looked at this bill many times before, Right to Work. We've done, I can't even count how many shows we've done on this topic. But in the past, Senator Bradley, when the legislature has looked at this, some Republican union members have actually pushed back, even though Republican leadership in general has liked this proposal. So in the House, again, it was mostly Democratic opposition, but not all. Some Republicans, firefighters and so forth, said, no, I don't like this either. What do you expect this time?
You know, I think that it will pass the Senate. Again, just as you said, we have had this bill every year or every 2 years forever and a day. So there's nothing new. There's no rush to judgment. People have run on this issue. They've talked about it in their campaigns. There's no rushing this bill because we've had it so much in the past. I feel very confident that it's going to pass the Senate, and I think it will enjoy a very favorable reception in the House also.
What do you think, Senator
Woodburn? I think we have a lot of new members. We always do. The unprecedented nature of having a hearing, closing it before information is even read or considered is disrespectful. It's to our democracy and the way we operate in the Senate and in the general court. But I would say that the New Hampshire, maybe the public opinions might say that, but our reasoned and thoughtful legislators, dominated by Republicans for 40 years, have said no. This is not good for New Hampshire. And you know what? You don't have to look farther than the North Country to see the success of a strong union, strong management, working together, local jobs, the dollars circulate around. And does anybody believe unions are too strong today? Does anybody believe that?
Well, we'll have to leave it at that. I'm sure our listeners would have some thoughts and opinions on that, Senator Woodburn, but you got the last word there for now. Thank you very much for being here, Senator Woodburn. I appreciate it. Senator Bradley, good to see you. Thank you also for your time.
Thank you very much, Laura. Pleasure.
This is The Exchange on NHPR.
The views expressed in this program are those of the individuals and not those of NHPR, its Board of Trustees, or its underwriters. Hey, if you like what you heard, spread the word. Please give us a review on iTunes to help other listeners find us. And thanks.